home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a great show today. Best-selling author Jeff Michaels is going to be joining us in just a couple of moments. But like we always do, we are going to give you the weekly recap of what's been going on. And what we're going to do is kind of like your TV guide for the show. So that way, if you want to come back and hang out later in the week or you miss something, you can always go back and listen and find out what's going on. Yesterday, we had Dr. Annie Ulrich on. She provided the June energy update and took listener calls. If you called in yesterday and want to, you know, kind of go back and re-listen to the program, I encourage you to do so. And you can fast forward and rewind. You can also go back and get the most recent 300 episodes, because I know, you know, that's really what you want to do is listen to 300 episodes back to back of the show. But we're on iTunes as a podcast. Just go search Rated G Radio and you can go and subscribe, and then you can take me on the road. And it's just, you know, kind of like we're going on road trips all the time if you're in the car. So do that. Tomorrow on the show, we are doing another morning broadcast. We're starting the day off with Mr. Ryan Boss. He's the executive director of Capital Pride, one of the nation's largest LGBT festivals during the month of June. And of course, they've got tons of events that are going on in our nation's capital. So Ryan will be on for about 20 minutes tomorrow talking about those events that are going on. And I know my buddy Peter Morgan has been posting different places where he's been popping up and, you know, showcasing the different festivities over the weekend. I think, you know, it's like 12 days of just awesome things that they're doing. So we'll hear all about that tomorrow from Ryan. On Thursday, I'm actually doing a replay, but it's a popular replay. And I'm telling you that ahead of time because replays, you can start listening to at 4 a.m. Pacific time. We are going to have the fertility expert back on the program on Thursday's show. He was a guest a few weeks ago and helps LGBT families, straight families, anybody who wants to have kids. But he talked in depth and very knowledgeable about the issue of fertility, and we had so many requests for that. So when the opportunity came up for me tomorrow night to go hang out with Jennifer Lopez and the cast of Blue Bloods at the TV Academy tomorrow night, I said, I have to go do that. So Rob's taking the night off. We're going to hear from our fertility expert tomorrow, and that's Thursday's show. And then on Friday, we do a early Friday night dance party starting at 2 p.m. We've got Angie and the Deserters. Angie and the Deserters are a country band. We're going to be playing two of their new songs off their yet-to-be-released. So this is kind of like an exclusive, a pre-world premiere, world premiere. One's called Country Radio, and the other is, I think, I Wish or I Believe, something like that. Anyhow, I uploaded it. I could look right now. Let's see here. Angie and the Deserters. It's The Gift. There we go. How did I get that? So we're going to play Country Radio and The Gift from Angie and the Destroyers. It's Angie and the Deserters. I want to say Angie and the Destroyers because it sounds much more professional wrestling, but that's not who they are. But Angie and the Deserters will be our guest in hour one. And then hour two, we've got another guest, Rachel Sage. She's on her world tour right now for a new album that she's got out, and it's called Choreography. And we're going to hear from Rachel on Friday in the second hour. Now, here's a little side note. Tonight in Los Angeles, Rachel is actually bringing her tour of cinematography. What did I say? Cinematography? Choreography. Where am I this morning? I've even done my cardio. I have no reason to be like fuzzy in the brain. But she's bringing her tour to LA, and I'm going to go see her and hang out with her tonight. So hopefully we'll get a little photo opportunity. So we'll have a picture to post on Facebook, and you'll see her smiling face before our interview on Friday at 3 p.m. So the Friday Night Dance Party with Angie and the Deserters starts at 2 p.m. and Rachel Sage is at 3. So everybody, it's always an honor and a pleasure to bring my next guest on. Jeff's been a big friend of the show for a long time. About a year ago, he was Tarot Jeff. He did tarot card readings, and he's offered spiritual advice, but he's best known for his work in metaphysical writing and channeling. He's been published in the Sedona Journal, and he's had best-selling books on Amazon. He's got a new young adult fiction book out called Toss's Path, and it is, you know, it's one of these rare opportunities where you have an author that is so gifted in so many different things, but he's coming to the show today just to kind of hang out and tell us what's been going on in his world and some of the workshops and things like that that he'll be leading in the coming months. So, Jeff Michaels, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you this morning?
I think my brain's mush. I don't know what's going on here. I'm sitting here reading directly from my paper, and I'm going Angie and the Destroyers, and it doesn't say Destroyers. But I'm even doing
atypical
this
typical for you.
It's
very atypical good. For you to be as flustered as you sound this morning. So I'm going to blame it on the sharks. You missed your morning swim down by the beach today. I know you swim to Catalina and back every morning.
Every morning. Well, you know,
morning.
It's brisk, you know, so it just kind of gets me going.
But the sharks interrupted the routine this morning. Is that right?
Well, how many sharks are out there? Because I had somebody asking me about that yesterday, and I was like, I don't know. I'm not out there counting them.
I can tell you, all of them. They're all.
All the sharks are in the water, right?
All the sharks are in the water. I have yet to see one on land. At least since the 70s and Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
The land shark.
But it's a big thing.
Three were sighted yesterday in Sunset. So you know that's significant. You know. So.
Well, is it because the water is warm, or is that you know we've taken all their fish, so they've got nothing to eat? What's happening with them that they're wanting to come closer to shore? Is they're just seasonal at this time of the year?
Well, it is a little bit seasonal, but what's happening is further out in the water, the atmosphere is changing out there, and so they're moving away from the warmth or the cold that they would normally be swimming around in. They're apex predators, so they follow the food. And what it really is the food is moving in. And so the sharks.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
duh. That makes sense.
You know, and I'm your local shark expert, I guess, because I did see the movie Jaws once.
Okay. So I have a question for you, and you know, because this has nothing to do with writing. We're eventually going to get on topic, people. So, you know, just give us like 45 minutes and we'll finally start talking about writing. So, What company do you have for your internet over at your house? Do you have Verizon or it's now Frontier?
We got the other guys, the ones that used to be Time Warner but are now Spectrum.
Time Warner is now Spectrum?
Well, they're going to be.
They're going to be. Okay.
Yeah, they're in the process of.
Well, I'm asking because I've had the worst problems with it's either my computer, and my computer I've had debugged, defragged, deliced, deloused. I've had it, you know, streamlined, super dupered, all of that. And I've had the worst time with Verizon's internet connecting, or I'll be mid-show and it will like drop off. And so, and it's not just me. So it's, you know, Marcus has it, David has it up front. And so it's, you know, everybody here has had issues where it just drops. And, you know, one of our computers looks like it's connected, but everybody else starts screaming because we all ping each other. Is it down? You know, and so we go reboot the router. And so, you know, the router's been rebooted more times than, you know, you can count. They actually came out 2 or 3 weeks ago and replaced it for like the second or third time. And so I've just had it. And so we're canceling the service. They don't know this yet. They probably are, you know, listening like the FCC or something like this. But so I go on before the show because, you know, I'm having a really difficult time connecting. I've rebooted, I've restarted, I've done all the stuff. And so while the show is going, you know, the first couple of minutes, I'm trying to do a Verizon speed test here on the computer just to see because it is not happening. Nothing's going on. And I'm going, we're hanging on by a shoestring here that the audio is even working today. So, of course, the Verizon speed test finally comes up. I had to reboot it like 2 or 3 times while we're talking here. And of course, it tells me I'm getting 83 megs download, 86 megs upload. And I'm like, there is just no free. I think this is like a speed test to like lie to you or something because it is just not that fast. So are you happy with your service? Because when we cancel this, by the way, we're going with Time Warner and or whatever they're going to be calling themselves.
Right.
Because we've had too many issues here.
Yeah. Am I happy with it? Let me say I'm not unhappy. The customer service has been pretty good. You know, there's been glitches, but that, you know, you got to deal with some glitches here and there. This is, you know, this is a huge process of trying to keep everybody connected and everybody communicating. And sometimes it just, you know, some poop, you know, I had a 3-year-old nephew and I taught him to say poop happens. Because it did, you know, he was having trouble toilet training. So poop happens. Right. And, you're going to have these glitches, but when you're starting to have way too many of them, like you guys are, you can bail. We're not happy with Time Warner at this point in time. I'm a little concerned because a lot of people have had trouble with the changeover, as the rolling change comes through. But also I think there's a bunch of planets in retrograde right now too. So, I don't have a real good answer for you in it, except that we're not unhappy with the Time Warner people at this point in time. So, and we've had them for 10 years. So,
right. Well, you know, and I'm a very loyal customer. Once I sign up, you know, you pretty much got me. You have to do a lot to make me not want to be with you. And you know, it's wonderful that you can call Verizon or Frontier, and then now it's Frontier, and you might get somebody that's stateside. Probably not. And they might try to understand what you're saying, but they don't. And then they schedule technicians, So, I mean, just not to beat this dead horse even further dead, but, you know, I had a service tech that was supposed to come out about 6-7 weeks ago, and they never showed up. And I went, well, you know, screw it. I'm going to cancel at the end of May anyway. And the guy shows up exactly a week later. And it's not, you know, and I felt so bad because, you know, Marcus comes down here as I'm doing a show or something, and he goes, well, the Verizon guy is here. And I screamed out here. I said, he's a week late, you know, and it turns out that this guy's working, you know, close to like 90 hour work weeks. They've got him so overworked with, you know, so it's completely not his fault. And the poor guy was just trying to do the best he could. So, you know, I'm cutting him all the slack because it's not his issue whatsoever.
Right.
I'm shocked because, you know, for $90 a month, you know, at this day and age, you kind of expect flawless. Now, you know, if I'm not going to get flawless for $90 a month, I at least want it to work. Now, if you're not going to go at 86 megabytes or whatever, I'd like 10 megabytes. I'd like to at least stay connected. But, you know, having this disconnect and to be like, well, you know, maybe it'll come back up and maybe that's just not acceptable anymore. Anyway, that's my little soapbox for the morning.
It's all right.
So what else is new and exciting in your world? You recently celebrated a special day.
Yeah, I did. We got double points at Starbucks. That was pretty special. So.
That is a cool day.
Yeah. You know, a year ago I had a great day, a great birthday, and we were on stage in Sedona. We had a wonderful presentation that we did and was amazingly well received, and I turned 30 for the second time on that day.
Wow.
So just the other day I turned
30 and a half,
I guess, for the second time. I'm trying, you know, you can tell I'm good with words, but give me simple math on that. So that just flushes me down the toilet. So
you know, and you're like, you know, I'm 4¾ because, you know, it's so much closer to 5 because you can't wait to be 5. Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. So, you know, I want to tell you, one of the huge finds that I really like is, you know, every once in a while, you know, we go hang out at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. Is that the place up on Beach and Adams?
Yeah.
And when we were there over, I guess it was over the weekend, and I always go in and say, I'd like a large coffee. And this time the guy says, okay, great. You know, because large coffee is cheap and, you know, it's not, I'd like a triple foam, half this, quarter this, double pump of, you know. Coffee should just be friggin' coffee. I don't know what, you know, ended up happening to our society. It's like everybody deserves to be a winner. Everybody's going to get a sticker. No, not everybody needs a sticker. Some people just need a large coffee. So that's me. I'm the large coffee. And so the guy goes, you can have this iced, you know, and if you get it iced, you get a bigger cup. And I went, where have you been all my life? This is great. And he goes, and there's more caffeine in it, and it's a lot smoother. And I said, sign me up. So I will tell you, at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf at Beach and Adams, if you go there, and I'm sure it's at all of them, but they had this giant iced coffee that, you know, I don't put any sugar, I don't put any cream, I don't put anything in. It's just iced coffee. And it was really, really good, because some of the, you know, coffees, and if they're iced, you know, they still have that little bitter taste. And true to his word, he goes, yeah, it's smoother and it has a richer taste. And it was spectacular. I thought, that is the best find of my week.
Oh, we're gonna pump the reputation of Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf a little bit, because we're pretty happy with them. We've talked about coffee before. I'm late to the coffee game. I didn't drink coffee for most of my life, and then I don't know, about 4 or 5 years ago, it just sort of seemed like I was going to start drinking coffee. And one day I was at a Starbucks and said, "What is that?" And the guy told me, and I said, "I'll try it." And I've been drinking coffee ever since. So, but good coffee. And
yeah,
Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, they're scoring high on my dark and roasty kind of a coffee menu. So I like them a lot.
Well, and I also like the staff that they have there, this particular location. They're very friendly. They're very nice, very accommodating. And I'm sure other coffee places are equally wonderful. So, you know, we don't want to have a stampede. Yes, we do. We want a stampede of coffee shop owners calling in and screaming about how wonderful their people are. But at Beach and Adams, they're just really nice, super friendly. And here's something else that I thought was funny. At the bottom of my receipt, did they tell this to you? They go, "Oh, there's your code for the bathroom." You know, because apparently, you know, helps keep other people out or something like that. I've never had anybody say, "Oh, there's your code for the bathroom." I thought that was really nice. If you're going to have to have a code system to keep people from just coming in off the street, I thought that was really cool.
It's a good system, and I've met their trainer, Brett, the trainer over there, and cool guy, just a cool guy. We're on the same wavelength as far as training and things like that. I don't know if you know this, I was a corporate trainer for number of years, and I look for things when I walk into a place. I look to see who's happy, who's smiling, what do they offer, what don't they offer, and how many corporate initiatives are being foisted upon the poor kids at the front line. I'm going to drop back for just a second here, because you were talking about the repair guy that came out. People, honestly, be nice to the frontline people, because it's not their fault.
Ever.
And if they've got a little bit of an attitude, you can tell that it's because it's rolling downhill, guys. Something happened above them, and it's probably something happened above them. And just be nice as you can be to these folks, because they are you. If they're but for the grace of flying spaghetti monster goes you. So.
That's true. There are some frontline people that just, they are bad job matches, but I think that's the problem of that's a whole different thing altogether, but you can get into that, we didn't hire the right people for the job, because that happens. But, for the most part, those people they're just working their tails off to pay rent and, put food on their table. And, so don't take
they
out
got
your
the same bills as you and I.
Exactly. Anyway, so you're a corporate trainer. So how did that start?
Well, I've always been good at explaining things to people and simplifying a task down to its basic elements so that people can kind of get the whole picture. Training systems. I'm not a good student. I'm a terrible student, and I think that's how it happened. I had to break things down myself, and my best teachers were the ones that broke things down into simple elements and showed me how they connected. So that was, my best math teacher was the guy that broke things down. That was in geometry, Mr. Gibson. Thank you very much. My best English teachers, is a writer, that was important to me. But the best English teachers were the ones that didn't order me to read a book. They told me why the book was significant. And they made me want to go back into the book and see what was significant about it, see if I could pick it up. And sometimes they were right, and sometimes I felt they were wrong, and they were wrong for me. So why is Moby Dick important? Well, there's reasons, but I don't recommend Moby Dick to anybody. We'll recommend, that doesn't mean Melville's a bad writer. It just means Moby Dick is an old book that I don't know if it has as much significance to modern literature as I don't know if it can teach a writer as much today as other books could. So Melville wrote another book called Bartleby the Scrivener. It's not a book, it's actually a short story. Can learn a lot from Bartleby the Scrivener. So it's not the author, it's the type of book. And the teachers that affected me were the ones that broke things down. The teachers that bored me were the ones that insisted on unrelated facts. Howard Taft was, president that we just don't really need to know that much about to accomplish daily life. What was their birthday? What was the day that they died? When did they serve in office? It doesn't matter, see. What do they accomplish? How do they connect the theme, the thread, the narrative of American history, perhaps? That matters. So simple facts aren't what you need. How do the facts relate to each other is what you need. So it's storytelling in a way. So when I got into corporate training, it was a little bit of an accident, but people just noticed that anybody that worked next to me started to do the job better. And yeah. So that was how that worked. I got into it at a company called Medela. that was kind of the first place that I did it. And, and I'd been in construction before, and I had good apprentices that went on to make some money. And what we did with Medela was we actually established a training segment. And then when I went on to Circuit City, I was good at that job. I was really good at the sales aspect of it, and they moved me right into sales management and then kind of store management as well. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun because you're making people better. Corporate training for me was never about the corporate initiative. It was always, how do you make somebody's life better? And usually that's helping them understand where their bootstraps are and how they can raise themselves up by their own bootstraps.
So why do you leave that?
Why did I leave Circuit City?
Or management? The corporate training world.
Why did I leave? I never did. I still do training. It's just a different field entirely. And I got out of corporate training because, Circuit City was closing down, and I left before they closed down, so it's not my fault. And I moved to Borders, and I was a trainer at Borders for a little bit, but I was having more fun being on the floor at Borders. I was a music manager there. And if you notice, there's no Borders around either, but I left before they closed down, so again, it's not my fault. I left because I wanted to do my own thing, really. And we started, Jill and I had the store at that time, and we started the classes that we were doing. So we were teaching, we taught a lot of metaphysical and spiritual classes to people and broke the elements down so we could help people understand the concept of say, astrology or past life regressions or tarot readings. And it worked really, really well. We had great success with it. Currently, I'm working on becoming a certified Tai Chi trainer with David Dorian Ross, who saved my life many, many years ago on a videotape. He got me up and moving when I was pretty critically injured, and he didn't do it personally. It was just the videotape that he had put out. But since
his material came to you after you were critically injured.
And it turns out, we live in Huntington Beach, and so does he. We've gotten to know each other, and it's really, really fun. It's really nice because he's just a great guy. He's on the East Coast right now doing his second Great Courses sessions. So if you ever get that catalog in the mail where you can take college courses on a DVD or a CD, MP3 or stream them or whatever their technology is, you can learn a lot of things. You can learn math, you can learn cooking, you can learn photography, you can learn history, and now you can learn Tai Chi from David Dorian Ross with his first program and his soon to be his second program. So I highly recommend it. I'm a big fan of Tai Chi, Qigong, And I've been an instructor in the past, but kind of on my own. And so, like you say, when did I leave it? I never did. I just got, sort of changed things up. We're going to be doing well, and you were actually at one of the sessions. When was it? Last month, right? When we read Gatsby books.
Right. Yeah, that was fun.
And we did. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I was piloting a program that we're calling the Long and Short of Storytelling, and it was under the guise of a book reading. I was presenting A Day at the Beach and other brief diversions, my short story book. There's my plug. But what I was really trying to do was pilot the session, the long and short of storytelling. So hopefully we're going to start doing that a little bit more often. And I thought it went real well. What did you think? Did you learn anything?
Well, I thought it was really cool. The people that were there were really engaged with what you had to say. The stories were, you know, I'd heard a couple of the stories. You had a surprise at the end, which I didn't see coming, like any good storyteller. But, you know, you had surprises along the way. Now, I will say that anybody who's listening to the show today, if you're looking for ways to find out more about Jeff's writing, I'm making it so easy for you today. It just doesn't get any easier. On the show page, the first two words, Jeff Michaels, right there on the page. It's a hyperlink to his Amazon page. You can go and buy all of his books today. We always say buy 10. You only need one for yourself. Gift 9 to other family and friends that you have, and they will thank you years and years and years down the road. I've also got a link to Jeff's website, which is jeffreyjmichaels.com. And then also, if you want information about his channeling work, there's a link, or there's just a blurb on his channeling as well. So if you want to go check any of that out, please do so today. And I always say, you know, and Jeff knows this, you know, we have a lot of indie people who are on the show, and this is a great spotlight for whatever project they're working on, whether they're authors like Jeff or they're musicians or actors or whatever. Go support them, because when you buy one of their books or buy one of their CDs or their DVDs, you are actually putting money in their hands to help them pay rent, to be more creative, make more creative, fun projects that you will enjoy in the future. Unlike, you know, people who are betrothed to the large publishing companies, which is great in itself, and we'd all love that seven-figure contract, or music, you know, label that is going to throw cash at you like there's no tomorrow, or the big studios, whatever the case is. You know, that's a completely different animal. So if you go and buy Justin Bieber's CD, you know, whether or not he doesn't really care. He cares that, you know, a million people buy it. He doesn't care that, you know, 100 people buy it. We care if 100 people buy anything that we do. So support that independent person wherever they're at, whether it's at a book signing at Gatsby's in Long Beach, or at Lit Up in, you know, Tustin, or it's at the Southern California Writers Association, or any of the places that you go. Since we're talking about books today, please do that. You'll be getting material, arguably, that is, you know, I'm going to be biased here because I know so many of the people that are involved, but I say better than what you're buying in the bookstores, because a lot of these folks have great stories and great words, and they tell the stories as well, if not better, than what you'll get in a lot of the stores. Why aren't you seeing them in the stores? Because they're not signed with major big publishers that get paid a lot of money to pay the authors next to nothing to do their craft. So when authors are at book fairs, book stores, book whatevers, and you have an opportunity to go pay $10 or $20 for their book, please do so. It's a testament to their hard work, but I guarantee you will be enjoying the material that they get. And they'll probably autograph it for you too, if you smile really nice. But I'm sorry to get off on that, but I want to make sure we cover that before the half hour, because we're going to just blow through the rest of the show here, because we're already at the halfway point, Jeff. Believe it or not.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
We know we're at the halfway point of 2016 as well. So.
We are. Oh my gosh, that's right. We're already halfway through the year. Where did this year go?
I don't know, but if you got goals, if you set goals, you got six more months.
Yeah. Well, let's do that. So let's talk. Can you, 'cause I want to talk more about what you did at Gatsby's. And, you know, you have this concept that you have, you know, put down, and you're going to be taking this out to the masses, you know, in various different forms in the coming weeks and months. And I'm fascinated by this. So tell us about this in more detail. So people if you missed the Gatsby's event, you missed out, folks. I'm telling you. So now you have to put it on your calendar wherever Jeff's going to be next. You have to go and actually watch him speak, because it is entertaining and the stories are great. But Jeff, tell us about your program.
Well, now that you gave me the big plug about, you know, showing up, everybody should need to show up where I'm going to be. I'm actually not scheduled any place for couple months. But we're working on it. Is the idea. So, we had a great time at Gatsby's. Downey Desserts. Let's plug them, Garrett. Yeah. They supplied us with just amazing desserts. We had a really good time. The purpose of the way I look at a lot of my training is, let's take away some of the rules and regulations that have grown up that people have sort of concretized, sort of systemized, as if they are etched in stone. And so we just had an article on the Facebook page. Jennifer Redmond Silva posted an article, and I don't think it was her article, but it was interesting anyway. It was on the Southern California Writers Conference page, which I heartily recommend. That's going to be taking place in September. I'm going to say the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. I can clarify that if I look it up here. But the Southern California Writers Conference Facebook page is a good resource for writers. If you're looking for articles and reference work, plus it's a good community to be involved in. The Southern California Writers Association is a smaller group. The conference occurs twice a year, once in San Diego in February and once in they call it the L.A. area. That means Orange County, folks, because nobody really wants to go to the L.A. area. That happens every September. So it's a lot of fun. But again, both of them are communities. If you're a young writer, an aspiring writer, you got to get into a community, ladies and gentlemen, because boys and girls, it's important. It's important because you get a good feedback and you get to meet people who are going through the same stuff that you are going through. Some have been there before you, some are coming in after you. It's just great. It's a lifesaver for a young writer, for any writer, really. So my purpose in doing this, the long and short, is to kind of not to break the rules necessarily, but to help people understand that the rules themselves aren't rules. They're suggestions that work very well in most cases, but you don't have to follow them all the time. There's a famous writer's book called I just always refer to it as the first five. I'm not sure if that's actually the name of it. It's Noah Lukman's book, and he postulates that the first five words in your book are the most important, and the first five sentences after that are the most important, and the first five paragraphs after that onto the first five pages. Now, what I see then is I see people work feverishly over their first fives, and the rest of the book kind of trails off. And so it's good, the information is good, but what I'm looking for is I'm looking to help people to get into the rest of the book and make sure that they understand. And to Noah Lukman's credit, he does go on with that and says, yes, you have to craft your book entirely like this. But for me, a lot of times it's the final five that really seals the deal for a book. If the last five pages of the book don't leave me wanting more, the book is a waste. And if you can get down to the last five words and let them just ring in the reader's mind, it's important. It's very important for a young author to understand the conclusion is as vital as the introduction, the beginning. So that's one of the aspects of the long and short of storytelling is you got to get to the end. So the middle's got to be interesting, sure, but the impact, the final words, got to be there as well. So,
well, I think readers are really more forgiving if you kind of have a mushy middle, because at least I am, because I almost come to expect in the middle of the book you're going to hit your lull, because that's some part of the journey of the characters, and you got to go through the chase or the flight or the ocean liner or the whatever to get to the end. But there's nothing better. And I've read two books recently that I will tell you, in both books, when the author did it the first time, I went, no, you didn't. And then I thought, well, he's not going to do that again, because the guy's, you know, he's not going to be that quick. And he gets to the end of the second book and I went, no. And so I contacted the author and I said, where's book three? Why are you? And he goes, well, you know, I said, stop talking and keep typing. I'm going to hang up the phone now. And, you know, the book itself was, you know, it was great. It was fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, it's like watching Dynasty, or it's watching Dallas. It's like watching any, you know, show that you like on TV that, you know, you're coming up to the season finale. And then you get to the season finale and it's really a good one. And, you know, you are just wrecked because that's it.
Yep.
And I think that's a challenge a lot of authors have.
Challenge. You know, the problem is many authors are now trying to get a book turned into a movie or a TV series. And so it's like their book is their pitch.
Yeah.
And they forget that the book itself is an entity, and just write the book and don't worry about the pitch, you know. So we've had some just spectacular failures in what was once a promising situation. I mean, when Lucas released the second trilogy of of Star Wars, you know, we all enjoy it. It's fine, but compared to the first two movies, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the original Star Wars blew us away, and it started with action. I mean, we, you know, there was the scroll, the prologue, and there's a whole rule about prologues. Don't do prologues.
Don't do prologues.
You know, yeah. Every Star Wars film opens with a prologue. Some of them, the second trilogy, were confusing as all get out and didn't really help anything at all. But the very first one is a masterpiece of writing, and then the second movie was fantastic, and we were left hanging, Han Solo and the Carbonite being taken away by Boba Fett. Wow, that was great. That was just great. And then the third movie, do you remember how the third movie ends?
I didn't see the third
one. See, nobody remembers how the third movie ends right away. They have to think about it because it's a weak ending. It's a satisfying ending, but it's weak. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's too bad. It's just too bad. But the other one that I think about currently is The X-Files, when they just redid The X-Files. Everybody's so excited. Oh, my gosh, The X-Files are coming back with the original cast. And then the last show was this most amazing, stupid cliffhanger with no promise that there's going to be another series.
Right.
And so The X-Files has lost a lot of fans. People are just now not interested in it. And they'll all come back, but
they did that with the last feature film too of the X-Files. You know, because the first X-Files movies was great, because we don't really care about any of the other stuff. We want to see the UFOs. That's what we want to see. So give us
that. Where's the aliens? Where's the black oil?
The
aliens. You know, that's what we want.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they did a great job in movie number one, and you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to get to the second one. And so they redid, you know, the next movie, and the next movie was, well, this is more like a day in the life of, and you go through, it was the biggest snooze fest in the history. And it's like, this is maddening. So I don't know why they're either on it or they're completely off, just like that you said what they did with Star Wars.
And it's narrative choices. It's the author's narrative choice. But what happens in movies and TV is you get involved in a committee. A book, that's the author's vision. And until it gets to an editor, and a good editor is not going to change the author's vision. They're just going to purify the communication. So you need an editor, boys and girls. If you want to be a writer, you're going to get an editor. First, do a good draft. Now, when I say do a good draft, I mean do a first draft, that'll be crappy, and then purify that draft to the best of your ability, so you've got a third and a fourth draft going on. And when you present it to an editor, be prepared, because an editor is going to see things that you think are brilliant, and they're going to go, got to be removed. So you're still the author, and you still get to make the choice, do I want to keep that in or not? Now, when you get involved in the big companies, your work story gets taken away from you. And it's not always a bad thing, but it's not always a good thing either.
Right.
Honestly, some of Stephen King's work should have been taken away from him a little bit sooner. Yeah, but he's got a contract to fulfill. You know, he's a workman doing a job, and he's got a contract to fulfill. So, oh, my gosh, yet another haunted car. But people, he's got his fan base, and his brilliance is known amongst his fans. So you've got to understand that your work starts with you, but eventually your child goes off to school and becomes influenced by all of these other ideas. And you got to be prepared for that. The book, the narrative of a book, can be pretty pure these days because of self-publishing, because of Kindle and CreateSpace and Amazon. Changed the game up a lot. And you can be a success on Amazon by... Well, you can be a success by pandering. You can say, okay, there's a fan base not being served, and I'm going to write this unusual genre, and suddenly there's thousands and thousands of people following an author that nobody's ever heard because it's a niche market. And it may be terrible writing. It may be unedited, or it may be raw and beautiful. And it doesn't matter, it's selling. And ultimately, that's the thing about a book. It's a product. It's a work of art, but it's also a product. Now, if you want to be a starving artist and you want to say, this is my artistic expression, that's great. Do that. If you want to sell a lot of books, start reading some of these other books that I talk about. Read Stephen King's On Writing. It's an important book for a writer to read. It's actually two different books in one. And I'm not going to go into that right now. What you're looking to do is you're looking to establish your voice. You're looking to tell a unique tale or tell an old tale that's been told before in a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's also important for people to understand. The brilliant idea you have, it's not original. Somebody's done it before.
What?
Probably Homer. And I don't mean Homer Simpson.
There's a different Homer?
If you go back to the Iliad and the Odyssey, you're going to find so many of the stories that are being told today are told in those two narrative poems. It's just fantastic. I mean, the world of literature is an infinite thing. We have 26 letters in the American alphabet. And how many plays did Shakespeare write with 26 letters? How many books did Stephen King write? How many books Danielle Steele, Tom Clancy, and these best-selling people, Agatha Christie, and those are like the mass media kind of people. What about Isabel Allende, who's being translated from another language into English? You know, it's just astounding to me the beauty and the poetry that's available with just 26 letters. So when you're a writer, you're dealing with thoughts, you're dealing with emotions, and you're trying to connect the reader more often than not with what stirs them. Now, that can be romance, that can be action-adventure. As a youth, Doc Savage and Tarzan stirred me. I just, oh my gosh, you know, these things were just amazing to me. As an adult, oh, really? I read that book? You know, you go back and you look at some of the stuff and you think, what was I thinking to be reading this you know, kind of weak writing a lot of the times. But there's this element of energy that still exists within those stories, and people still connect with those stories in a very, very strong way. So connecting with your reader is an important part for a writer, but it's the avenue. It's the message from your heart. So you got to be in your heart first, and you got to start there. What stirs you? Because if it stirs you, it's gonna stir other people. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I now have a question, kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier about, you know, writers, and you're like, okay, Stephen King, another story with another haunted car. What do you think? about these authors, and I'm going to pick on, Stuart Woods, because I love Stuart Woods' books. He writes with these usually same two main characters. It's, you know, Stone Barrington, or he's got this other, it's been a hot minute since I've read a Stuart Woods book, but he's got, you know, these, it's either this female FBI agent and she's off, you know, doing whatever, or you got Stone Barrington and he's off doing his thing. And I don't know, it's like James Bond. James Bond is perpetually like 40 years old. It doesn't matter that, you know, the book series is now, you know, 40 years old, but James is, you know, always 40 years old. So he, Stuart Woods writes, and I love Stuart Woods' books. I will read every single one. And I will tell you, every single book is exactly the same. You know,
yep.
Stuart, you know, meets a hot chick, and then something happens, and then everybody's in peril. And then, you know, he gets in a plane and flies it, and he reads instrumentation stuff that makes no sense to me. And I hate it as a reader, but I read it anyway, but it's not 75 pages of it, so I'm okay. And then we get to the big finale, and then, you know, we cruise off into the sunset. It's the same formula every single book. Why do I love going back to that type of commitment to that author? Because there are lots of other books out there I could be reading, but I still go back to that series any chance I get.
There's patterns, and people get involved in the patterns. I mean, he's written 44 novels. You know, so it's the Stone Barrington, Holly Barker series, series, right? Yeah. And there's something about his writing that's connecting you. Now he's, I love our world, Garrett, because, you know, I'm not all that familiar with Stuart Woods, but I go to Amazon and I look at Stuart Woods' page, and here's this quick bio that tells me all I need to know to have an intelligent conversation about you with Stuart Woods. Stuart's, he's a private pilot. He flies his own jet.
Right.
He does this on his book tours. His latest novel is Santa Fe Edge. You get all this information about this guy, and there's all of his books, and now I'm interested in Stuart Woods. Mm-hmm. So, and why? Because you are.
Yeah.
Because I know you, and I trust your taste most of the time. Most of the time. And I say, well, if Garrett's interested, I wonder if I would enjoy this guy. It's wish fulfillment in a lot of cases. It's a fantasy situation for a lot of people. Young boys like Tarzan because Tarzan is always in control. They like Doc Savage because he's always got an answer. And Doc doesn't like girls that much. So, you know, it's a young boy situation. And so that's why the boys connect, and not so much the men. Except the men who've got, I don't know, Peter Pan syndrome.
Sure.
Why Stuart Woods? If I were to read a Stuart Woods novel, I'm going to guess that there's people doing high quality things in high high level environments of society. Things that appeal to you, Garrett. These people are classy people, and they go places that are classy places. And I think that's probably what appeals to you about that. Plus, the story is predictable enough for you that you're going to be comfortable with it, and yet unpredictable enough that you're going to go, well, how are they going to get out of this one?
Right, right.
And Stuart Woods, being a good author of 44 novels, including the New York Times best-selling series, Stone Barrington and Holly Barker, he's going to be doing what he does the best for you and for all of his people. It's like John Grisham. When John Grisham wrote, what was the very first one? Tom Cruise in it.
The Tom Cruise movie, right.
Yeah, The Client, was that the first one?
Yeah, anyway, it was The Client.
I read that book, and I was fascinated by that book. And, you know, the thing that fascinated me, I couldn't tell you the plot really, really clearly. But he talked about he was a law student, and he got out of school, and then he was being pitched to by he was going to be hired by this firm. The firm, that was what it was, the firm. And the firm wanted him to be this way, and so he had to buy not just a Mercedes, but a specific Mercedes, not just a brand of a watch, but a specific brand of a watch. And it was amazing to me the subtlety of class that this law firm was putting out and they needed to have him comply. And,
sure.
And so I was fascinated with how the character reasoned his way into this higher class of society. So then I read more of John Grisham, because that's what I wanted, was more of that. I didn't always get it.
No. Because after about the second or third book, you know,
sure.
it's kind of like one more book about the same lawyers.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I just kind of got lost after that.
Right. So it didn't appeal to me after that, but he sold me on at least two or three of his books because of one book. So
right.
Stuart Woods is doing that to you. Stuart Woods is saying, hey, here's this society. And even though you don't care about all of the technical stuff about the flying, you do care about the pilot. You do care about mm-hmm. who's mm-hmm. on board the plane, where the plane is going. And so all the technical stuff, that's just Stuart Woods.
That's him making him feel good.
Exactly, exactly. He's yeah. writing from his heart. So he's got a bunch of people reading the book because they like the technical stuff about flying. He's got you reading the book because you like to know plane is taking off from this airport and going to this other airport. And something interesting is going to happen when he gets to Rome or when he gets to Buenos Aires or
right,
Chicago
right.
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right?
So. And his character is just, because I think maybe also part of it is that some of those characters start to become your friends, as weird as that sounds,
they
but they're very familial
yep.
as far as, you know, Holly Barker or Stone Barrington or any of the other people. You know, Stone has
yep.
a secretary who, you know, certainly has to be past retirement age at this point, but she's still a secretary. You know, and you have all these people that you come to expect, you know, it's like, please make a cameo at least. And
yep.
you know, sure enough, you know, he always finds a way to include him in some capacity. And then he's like, okay, fine. I don't know.
Every
that's
successful
really clever.
Series has got a family. Every
yeah.
successful series. And, you know, you think of Bonanza and then you think of Star Trek. And,
yeah, same thing.
You know, the family, the Cartwrights are the family, right? But there's a correlation of the characters, the archetypical characters in Bonanza with the original Star Trek crew, and there's a correlation with the original Star Trek crew and the X-Files characters. You start to look at these things. Now, Jill and I are watching West Wing right now, and those characters are our friends. We care about them. We
right.
may not agree with them. We may not like them all the time, but we care about those characters, and we know who's the daddy and who's the mommy and who's the firstborn male child? You know, we know this, and it's all archetypical stuff. So you've had Matt Palomari on, and Matt talks about archetypes.
Oh, man.
He's an amazing guy. I like Matt a lot. He talks about the shamanic approach, but he also talks about the archetypical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, you know, at the Southern California Writers Conference, there's going to be somebody talking about I think it's Oz Monroe going to be talking about the neurolinguistic programming and the archetypes of characters. That's going to be a great session. It's going to be a great class. We're looking at people that we want to hang out with. We're also looking at people that we don't necessarily need to commit our time and our lives to.
Right.
So it's a little bit of an escape. We can feel like we're connected with the world through these people. And yet we don't have to actually do anything. So there's this lazy side of humanity that I enjoy watching. And TV has really played to that, you know. So Gilligan's Island, you know, ran for 3 years. And it was the same, you know, they never got off the island, right? Because if they got off the island, that would be the end of the show. Because once
right.
they were off the island, those characters, they weren't going to hang around with each other.
And they weren't interesting because even on all the reunion movies where they all made it back to L.A. or whatever,
yeah.
you know, before they got shipwrecked again, I mean, you know, what are
again.
The odds? You know, their lives were utterly uninteresting to everybody. So, you know, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. Yeah. So you look at the closed world of a writing, of a cast. And, you know, I'm talking a lot about the cinematic and television media here because it's easy to access that for people when we're talking about storytelling. But in books, it's a closed situation as well. Now, Agatha Christie used to write mysteries, and what was the best mysteries that she wrote? The ones where people were trapped in a building or trapped on an island or trapped someplace where they couldn't get out or away until the mystery was solved. So, and then there were none. So they're all on this island. And
I
they don't love know why
that
they invited
one.
The island,
oh, my
right?
gosh.
She's great. Oh, my gosh, you know. And it's dark. I mean, the ending of that is dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, she doesn't let anybody off the hook in that one. And it's a great, great story in that it allows us to kind of explore our own darknesses. What are we up to? So, you know, in my own writing, and there's a lot of that. There's a lot of people exploring their own darknesses. And there's just the horror genre is exploded, and people doing that really, really well. I mean, my own writing, what I try to bring across is how do we be better? You know, when we were talking about corporate training before, and it's like, how do you get to be a better person? And it's one of my favorite themes is take where you're at right now. Okay, none of us is perfect. None of us is in the perfect situation. Where are you at? How do you become a better person? And so a lot of this is just exploration of that, you know. So, and I do it through stopping time, or a genie appears, or an angel appears. And sometimes it's funny, and sometimes it's poignant, and sometimes, you know, but the characters sort of dictate what's going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I like doing that. I like letting characters dictate what's going to go on. I like the short story form real well, but I also like the narrative form, novel form, for different reasons.
Yeah.
And you start them and you end them differently. But are you a better person because of it, or are you just more comfortable with your own darkness? And so I always go for the better person, you know. Yeah.
Well, selfishly, I'm going to tell you, you know, and by the way, we've got just under 3 minutes left. So if you're listening to the show today, Jeff Michaels has been our VIP guest superstar. I'm going to encourage each of you to click his name on the show page, because that will take you to his Amazon page. You can buy all of his books on Amazon right there. If you want to go down and find out more about Jeff, at the bottom of the show page, there's a link that will take you directly to his website. So please do that. I will tell you, selfishly, I love A Day at the Beach. You know, you tell so many different stories in there. Some of them, you know, and I can read them fresh. You know, I can read the book back to back to back to back. And every time I read the stories, it's like I'm reading it for the first time. And the characters are fresh. The writing is witty. The stories are poignant. And I've told you this. There are several stories in there, Jeff, where I'm reading them. And I just suddenly start to tear up and well up. And I'm like, where is this coming from? You know, and it surprises me every time, because your writing gets me. And I'm like, I did it again. And, you know, so having you as a guest today is a real treat, because I don't think we get a chance to really just to chat with authors just about stuff. You know, it's always like, I have to pitch exactly this book for, you know, this particular whatever. You've got so many books out there that it's really easy for people to just go onto Amazon and take a look at some of the different metaphysical books that you've written, or your book Tosses Path, and you know, pick something that's, you know, that kind of shouts out and speaks to them. But with about a minute left, do you have any closing words that you'd like to share with the listeners and your fans who are tuning in today?
Be better. The world is polarized. You know, there's a quote from a man named Norman Vaughan, and Norman climbed a mountain at one point in time. He was almost 90 years old when he did it. He'd never climbed a mountain before. It was a mountain that was named after him. There's a long story that goes behind that too. He'd gone to the South Pole with Admiral Byrd, and Byrd named a mountain after the guy. And when he was in his 80s, he decided he wanted to climb this mountain, and he gets to the top of it, and they asked him if he had any wisdom at all. And he said, dream big and dare to fail. And so I always echo that, but I always like to add, be better. Be better tomorrow than you were today. Be better today than you were yesterday. Move forward with life. The world is polarized right now, and you don't need to be. You don't need to be polarized. You don't need to take a stand. You don't need to take a side. You just need to be the best person you can be today. And
do that.
And
by the way, in California, it's time to vote today. So if you haven't voted, I don't care who you vote for, but I do care that you go out and vote. And with that, folks, we're out of time. Come join us tomorrow morning with Ryan Boss, Executive Director of Capitol Pride in Washington, D.C. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.